This is Bob Schultz. This is the second in our series on the ministry in baptism, Eucharist, and ministry. What I would like to do today is to lay some background for tomorrow's discussion. And I would like to do that by talking about some questions in non-theological terms, talking about some questions of leadership rather than about ministry. My reason for doing that is that the doctrine of ministry is the way in which the church describes the function of leadership in the organization of the church. And there are some questions of leadership which it is easier to think about if you think about them first outside the context of the church and then think about them inside the context of the church. Right. In other words, if you think about them first as non-religious questions and only then think about the church's doctrine of the ministry as a special form of answer to those questions. And there are three questions that I would like to raise with you. The first is how does it happen that when you come into a group, okay, that there is a designated authority? And what does it mean if there is not a designated authority? What does it mean if there is a designated leader or if there is not a designated leader? Our looking at that question will help us get some insight into why it is important for the church to have a ministry. Our second question is how is it that in a group of people who are present because they want to be present, which is the nature of the gatherings of our churches, how does it happen that in that kind of a group of people, which in our topic I've called a voluntaristic organization, how does it happen that the designated leader has authority? How does anyone get authority in a group? And what is the relationship between the authority of the designated leader and the authority of the people in the group? So for example, here, I am the designated leader. I have some that gives me some authority. I start the session. What other kinds of authority do I have as designated leader? But all the authority in this room is not in me. You have authority too. What is the relationship between the authority that you have and the authority that I have? Because that becomes a very important question for ministry in the church as we experience it. And the third then is, what are the designated tasks of leadership in any organization? And if we have time, we'll then raise some questions about what that says for the continuity of lay and ordained ministry. Okay. So the first question that we want to look at is, what does it mean that there is a designated leader? And what happens in a group if there is not a designated leader? There are a couple of things that a designated leader is able to do.
a designated leader, designated as leader by some authority accepted by all of us, existing outside this group. In this case, in my case, the administration of Holden Village, right, has put up on the bulletin board a notice that there would be a discussion led by me on a certain topic. And it has also said what time this session would start. Now the fact that my name is on that slip of paper gives to me special functions in the group. If I would not start the group, you would be hesitant to do so. Right? After 15 minutes, if you were still here, you might. But you would consider it to be something that you would want to think about very, very carefully. Because the person who starts the group needs to have a clear sense of designation to do that. You also may feel, as participants in this group, that we are not doing what we ought to do. Perhaps you may feel that today, that what I am proposing to do in today's session is not something that you would have chosen. But as designated leader of this group, right, I not only start the group, but if I am functioning, I also say something about what we are trying to do in this group. Think about the content of the doctrine of ministry in baptism, Eucharist, and ministry, and also say how I think we can do that today. So I define our task and I set the agenda. Now, I'm the first one to do that. You may choose from your position to say, as we go along, I think that you're missing an important question. Or there's something I'd like to talk about that you don't seem to be coming to, and I'd like to raise a question about that. That happened yesterday. Some of you raised questions. Some of you said, let's talk about this. And you'll remember how you felt before you did that and after you did that. Because you were not designated leaders, there was a higher degree of risk for you in saying something about your feeling about what we really should be doing than there was for me. Okay? So it is important for a group, any group, to have a designated leader. Okay. If you have ever been in a group in which there has not been a designated leader, then you know how much time and effort and energy has been lost in trying to figure out who was going to help the group decide what it was they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it. Okay. Now, let me just give you a little piece of advice. If you are ever in a group that does not have a designated leader, and you think that you have the capacity to help that group, then it is always easier to help the group pick a leader than to volunteer as the leader yourself. Now, it is important to have a designated leader. In the church, the word that we use for leader is minister. And what we are going to try to say tomorrow is that this designated leader within the church is designated by ordination. The designation of leaders who carry on the church's work outside the boundaries of the church, in the world, is designated, it takes place through baptism. So we're going to be looking at what I understand to be the relationship between baptism and ordination. We'll save that for tomorrow, but that may simply give you a hint. And it's an important hint because as we come to the questions of the tasks of ministry, I want to ask you in preparation for tomorrow to think about the different kinds of tasks that ordained and baptized ministers have. Okay. Now, within the church, the way in which we designate a leader is through ordination. And we say, in almost all of the churches, there are two qualifications for being designated as a leader. One is some kind of inner condition or charisma. The other is the evaluation by people in the church that you have both the personal qualifications and the skill to do the job, and you have to have both. Now, the first, the inner condition of wanting to, is in theological language called charisma or the inner call or being called by God. That's the work, that's the seen to be as the call of the Spirit. That gives to someone in the church the feeling that this is something, this is a function which they could fulfill. They could get things started and they could say, this is what God wants us to do. However, that inner call is not enough. Right? To be a leader, one must also be approved by some external authority. Now, in my case, they said to me, those happened in the reverse order. The external authority, the administration of Holden Village, said to me, Schultz, we think you could lead one of these groups. Would you like to? And I said, yes. I have both the inner desire, the inner condition, which says, yes, this is something which I want to do, as I feel called to do, and the outer authorization from external authority, which says, this is something which you are able to do. Now, what that what that means for us is that the administration puts up a little piece of white paper on the bulletin board, makes an announcement in the dining hall, and people are here. You need both. Now, if you go home and you say, folks, I've got this big house, and kids have left, so what I'm going to do is open a church, and we'll have Bible study and services in the living room, and I've got one of those spare bedrooms that's going to be my office. Neighbors would kind of look at you. Some might come if you're an unusual person, but many of us could do that, you know, and never have anybody there. On the other hand, if you go to seminary for a year or two or three and come back saying the Lutheran Church in America, or the American Lutheran Church, or the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has asked me to open a church in this community, then you come in quite a different way. You come as someone who has received authority not just internally from God or from yourself, but you have received authority externally from some group which has some believability as far as the people in your town is concerned. That makes you a designated leader. However, once the people come and you get started, once you ring the bell and say, all right, services are about to begin, then you are dependent upon another process. And that is that the people who are present also have to give you authority. Okay. So there has to be an internal and there has to be an external. That's ordination. But there also then, as soon as you work with a group of people, what you realize is that you have no authority. Really don't. Okay. If you've ever led a Bible class or a discussion group in your home church, you will have understood that. Okay. Bell rings, people come streaming in, and you start to work, and you get the feeling, hey, nobody's with me. They're all sitting there. But they aren't with me. Maybe there are some people there who I know are not with me at all. It's a very interesting thing about authority once you get the group started. You see? Once you get the group started, then you are dependent upon the people who are present giving you authority. You may have had the unpleasant experience of living in a congregation, as members of a congregation, in which the members of a congregation have refused to give that authority to the pastor, or who having given it, have withdrawn it. And he's had to leave. Right? You've been through that? Good pastor, objectively a good pastor, but something just hasn't happened, right? It hasn't worked with that group of people. They have not given authority to him or her. Yes?
Two things. Can you have a situation where you have partial authority? And what I'm thinking about is that I'm really looking into what you're saying, and that it seems like sort of the credibility factor in our expectations that are in. And it's funny, we accept people's leadership if we agree with them, or if we, I guess we agree with them, or they're meeting our expectations. And I'm thinking of a situation where there is a conflict of opinion about something, and therefore some people, an element of people, are sort of not hearing anything, therefore, and not respecting any of the leadership, when some of that, they're missing the good part as well.
Right.
The walls go up, and therefore, you know, there isn't that, you know, they're not participating in that authority. And then there's some people who seem to be buying into part of it. You know, they'll accept what they can, and they'll throw away what they can. So it is a tool for
you. This is a very important issue. A very important issue. Because if we are going to talk about the ministry of the laity in the church, and talk about the ministry of the laity as taking place in the world, one of the things we have to say to the people whom we are sending out as ministers in the world is, how do you get authority? And what does it mean to have authority? Okay, I'd like to give you a definition of authority. And that is that authority gives to you the right to work in a group. If I were speaking, all of you would get up one by one or as a group and leave. What you would take away from me is not my knowledge, not my competence. But what you'd take away from me is my right to work with this group. You'd say, Schultz, you know, whatever it says up there on the board, and for whatever reasons we came, we're not staying. We're through, and you're through. If you think of authority as the right to work. Now, one of the rights to work is the right to designate the issue that it is important for us to work on. To raise a question. You can raise a question and people will say, yeah, that's a good question. And people will give to you the authority to raise the question. They will not necessarily give you the authority to answer that question. Okay? They will say, yes, the question that you are raising is important, but you want to do the wrong thing. And we're glad that you raised the question. But we wish you'd given a better, you wish you had reached a better decision for yourself. And we will not follow you in that decision. If you've ever seen the delicate process of buying an organ for a church, just the question as to whether or not you want electronic or pipe. Now, I am personally all in favor of pipe organs. I guess they can't
It's impossible to maintain one here at Holden. But I'm all in favor of pipe organs. And I could tell you, take me 15 minutes to tell you why. But if, as pastor of a congregation, I have to be very careful in recognizing that the members of my congregation expect me to say, it's time to think about buying a new organ. That I have authority to do. But as to the question as to what kind of an organ and how much we're going to pay for it, that authority is not necessarily given to me. Now, there are some pastors who have that kind of authority, right? Anything they want to do happens. There are other pastors in other congregations that have rather limited authority. One of the tasks of leadership is to recognize the kind of authority that I have and its limitations, and to pay attention to the way in which that authority comes to me. And that is a very important question for the ministry of the laity. Is if you are going to minister to the world, then the world will have to, you can be authorized by baptism. You can be called by God. But the world is also going to have to say to you, we are giving you authority to do this. We may not like your doing it, but we want you to keep on doing it. So that kind of authority, that kind of delegation of authority, which says you have a right to work on the task. That happens even when you ask a question or when you make a comment. If you make a comment, the people sitting around you may all get up and move their... I've had this happen to me in a group. Huh? I made a comment, and everybody got up and moved their chairs away from me. This is as though they expected lightning to hit. And it was a couple of days before anybody would talk to me. That was a lousy comment. I'm not going to tell you what it was, but that was a lousy comment. All right.
Yeah, but you felt it needed to be said, maybe.
Well, I felt it needed to be said, and I still think it was true. But it was a lousy comment. I mean, it was a very costly kind of thing. It isn't enough that it needs to be said, and it isn't enough that it's true, you see.
It has to be accepted.
Yeah, people have to, doesn't have to be accepted, but people have to have given, you have to have a good enough relationship to the group so that they give you the right to say it. It's like down in the Southeast, we get a lot of folks coming in from Minnesota and Michigan and Wisconsin, and they all come in and first couple of 2 months after they're there, they say, well, we're Lutherans. This is the way we do it in Wisconsin, right, or Michigan, or Minnesota. The people say, especially when there's somebody from Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota all talking at once and saying that Lutherans do it different ways. It's one thing to want to say it. It's another thing to be sure that it's true and that it needs to be said. And it's a third thing to say it at the right time. And the right time is the time in which people are willing to listen to what you have to say. Yes?
So it reminds me, I do work that's sort of related to a counseling type work, and you have to have a rapport and trust with the other individual before you can ask questions or discuss issues that are not real comfortable.
Right.
It seems like that's important in a group process too. And maybe we don't give enough attention to just building relationships and communication. It seems to be a basic element to leading into authority.